it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
Good evening. You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinky, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm here to give my insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. Visit our show site at TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts of previous shows. I'm joined tonight by one of our partners at Tully Rinky, Barbara King. Barb is one of the Capital Region's most well-known family and matrimonial law attorneys. We're also lucky enough tonight to have a special guest on our show, attorney Ann Copps with us. Ann is the principal attorney of her firm in Albany, and Ann joins Barb and I tonight to share expertise on the legal topic of adoption. Tonight we'll be looking at the different types of adoption, including just what happens during an open adoption and just exactly what is an open adoption, birth father rights, which is a very controversial topic, and common frauds and scandals to stay away from if you're looking to adopt. Also with us tonight are Val and Chris. If you have any questions for Barb or Ann throughout the show, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or press star WGY on your cell phone. Thanks for joining us again, Barb. This is your second show, right?
Yes, I enjoy doing these shows.
And tonight's legal topic is, as I mentioned before, adoption. And we're going to roll right into what exactly is adoption, Ann?
Adoption is a legal process where a child severs its legal ties with one family and becomes the legal child of another family. And the process goes through a court proceeding in order to do that.
And there's many different types of adoption, correct?
There are. I like to think of them as domestic adoptions versus international adoptions. And within the domestic adoptions, we have agency adoptions. And within that category, we have social service agency adoptions as well as private agency adoptions. Then we have adult adoptions. We have step-parent adoptions. And we have second-parent adoptions.
Let me stop you right there and ask you about second-parent adoptions. I heard something that in different states you can actually be arrested if you are a homosexual couple and you attempt to adopt a child. Is this true?
There are certain states in which it is not legal for a gay or lesbian couple to adopt. Those would include Florida, Texas, and Virginia.
That doesn't seem fair to me. But can't they just adopt on their own as a single person? You can adopt as a single person, correct?
You can adopt as a single person, although the way, for example, Florida's law is written, it's the fact of being a gay person and adopting that's illegal.
What is the state of the law in New York? And I know a lot of our viewers are probably interested in New York, if you are homosexual and you're in a relationship with another homosexual, you're in a relationship, can you adopt a child in New York? And how long has that been the law?
It's been the law for about 11 years, and you can adopt. It's done by case law rather than legislative law, so you can't go to a statute book and look for that law, but it was done just about 11 years ago in November by our Court of Appeals.
Now, I guess an interesting question is when you actually adopt a child, the birth certificate is amended, correct?
It is, and it has the new adoptive parents' names on it. If it's a gay or lesbian couple rather than mother and father, it will say parent and parent.
Interesting.
Now, Ann, I'm seeing a lot of foster care adoptions where couples take a child in as a foster child, and after a point in time, that child is freed up for adoption. Are you seeing that commonly?
Yes, yes, we do see a lot of those.
And then all the laws actually are state-specific, just to clarify.
They are very state-specific. Everything from how long you have to change your mind to how long and who can adopt are very state-specific.
You say change your mind, so you can give the child back?
Well, not easily. Once the adoption is finalized, it would be the same thing as a birth parent surrendering a child. Before the adoption is finalized, there is a limited opportunity for adoptive parents to return the child. That doesn't happen, as you can imagine, very often.
Well, the birth mother also has the right to change her mind, right?
She does for a limited period of time. If it's an agency adoption, it's a 30-day window, unless she's been to court and signed in front of a judge. If it's a private adoption, it's a 45-day window, again, unless she's been to court and signed in front of a judge. If she has signed a consent or surrender in front of a judge, her rights are terminated irrevocably immediately.
And that goes for birth fathers as well. They have the same time periods and options.
That's exactly correct.
I want to throw this out there for our listeners. If you guys have a question, comment, concern, please feel free to give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY.
Now, one of the more common types of adoption that I'm familiar with, especially as a law guardian, is when children are placed sometimes with the Department of Social Services, we see that after a certain period of time, the parents' rights are terminated and the children are eventually freed up for adoption. Foster placement adoptions, how common are they?
They're very common. There are many thousands of them every year in the state of New York, and certainly multiply that by the 50 states, there are many, many of them.
And I know one of the problems that I see is oftentimes older children, especially after they reach the age of maybe 2 or 3, it's a shame to say, but a lot of couples only want babies. What happens to older children? Is it harder to place an older child?
It is harder to place an older child, but the state of New York, in conjunction with the federal program, provides subsidies to encourage families to take children who are older or children who have health or other issues.
Now, subsidies, what are we talking here? You get paid to take a child?
Actually, yes. The state pays a monthly stipend to the family. It's somewhat similar to the foster care stipend that they receive while they're caring for a child. The state also covers their non-recurring expenses, such as legal fees.
Now, these payments, are these meant to just cover the cost of taking care of the child, or are these actual payments as compensation for these parents?
They're meant to help cover the special needs of the child.
So, Anne, I've seen this in cases where a couple have adopted a child from foster care with, say, fetal alcohol syndrome, and they are given that stipend until the child is, I believe, 18. Is that correct?
Or 21, depending on the child's needs.
Right.
Well, I got a question. There's got to be some kind of requirements for adopting. Anybody can't just go out and get a child. So what are the couple of requirements that people have to meet to be able to adopt a child?
Okay. There are a number of them. First, they have to be an adult. The adopting parents have to be adults.
What is an adult in New York?
For this purpose, 21 or above.
21. So you can be in New York 18 to vote, but you can't adopt until you're 21.
The law actually says an adult, yes. In addition to that, you need to have a home study, which is a comprehensive review of the adopting family. It includes their background, religion issues, financial issues. It's a very broad-based study done by a certified social worker.
You're saying religious issues. I mean, do they just check and see what your status is or what you're doing?
What they look at is if your child has, and perhaps spiritual would be a better way to put it rather than religious, because you don't have to have a religion in order to adopt. But if the child had spiritual questions, how would you be able to answer those?
Now, during these home studies, I mean, if an issue is arisen, I would imagine home study comes back with a recommendation that you not be able to adopt. Is there a way to appeal that?
There is. If it's done through an agency, you would have the right to a fair hearing. But often it is a conditional denial where it would list services that were recommended for the family. They can do those services and then have the home study revisited at that point.
Now, an interesting point that just crossed my mind is I have a friend that I went through ROTC with at Hofstra, and he had called me pretty recently asking me if I would be able to do his adoption, his personal adoption. He wanted to be adopted by a person who was very close to him, had helped raise him when he was a child. He's now 35 years old. Is there an age limit on when you can be adopted, or as an adult, can you be adopted?
You can be adopted as an adult, and those adult adoptions are fairly common in situations where someone was raised by a step-parent, and they want to have legal paperwork that kind of legitimizes the relationship that they've always had with that person.
And here's an interesting situation. I think I actually called you on not too long ago, where someone was here from another country and was an adult and was looking at being adopted potentially as a way around an immigration law. And my understanding is there's no way to do that, correct?
No. If you're over 14 years of age, you can't solve immigration problems by adoption. And even under 14, it's a very difficult route.
That's an interesting point, and we'd like to hear from you tonight. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. If you have questions but can't join us tonight, don't forget that we can be reached all week at the Tully Rinke office at 518-218-7100. When we're back, we'll look at the difference between an open and closed adoption.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, Portfolio Manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions. Online at integralone.net. That's integralone.net. 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and tonight I'm joined by family and matrimonial law partner at Tully Rinke, Barbara King, as well as special guest tonight. We have attorney Ann Copps with us as well. As always, Val and Chris are in the studio tonight to help break down the topic for you. If you hear something you want to give your opinion on, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Before the break, we were talking about some of the requirements for adoptions, and I know we kind of got a little sidetracked, so I want to bring us back, and we were talking about home studies, but do they do any backgrounds in regard to criminal clearances? I mean, to make sure that someone that has a sex offense or a sex offender doesn't end up adopting a child.
Every adult in the household where the child will be living has to have fingerprints done for criminal clearances. And there are some violent felonies that are absolute stoppers. If anyone adopting the child has those, they're stoppers. They can't adopt. All the adults also have to have child abuse clearances. And sometimes this can be the most challenging piece of pulling together information because the adoptive parents have to go back to 1973 or when they turned 18, whichever was nearer, and come up with every address at which they lived, the time period at which they lived, and the full address, including
zip code. And I know that's a big pain. I know when I took the bar exam, I remember before I got admitted having to do that. So that is a lot of work.
Exactly. What is the purpose of that?
It's to do a child abuse clearance. And the Office of Children and Family Services reviews those addresses through its computer to see not only was the person one who was named but was the address. So they might have been another person living at that address.
Now, Anne, I've had clients with backgrounds of perhaps some DWIs or minor misdemeanor situations. For the most part, those have not interfered with the adoption process. Have you seen those as problems?
No, but if there are multiple DWIs, someone might have to have an alcohol evaluation and follow the recommendations before being allowed to adopt.
Right.
There also are financial disclosures that the adoptive parents would have to give to the court and medical reports. And
what are we looking for in regard to financial disclosure? I mean, are we looking for bankruptcies? What are we looking for?
We're looking to see if they're able to make payments on their bills as they become due. You don't have to be a millionaire. People can be of very modest means and still adopt as long as they have control over their finances.
Now, hypothetically, you said with medical reports. I mean, if someone has some sort of medical condition, I mean, for instance, if someone has AIDS, I mean, are they going to be allowed to adopt the child? Or?
Yes, they are, as long as their doctor indicates that they have the ability to parent medically.
So you're not looking at records as if they have heart failure records or their family, something runs in their family?
No, it's looking at the individual and whether he or she would be able to be expected to survive long enough to parent this child to adulthood.
Now, I guess where I know a lot of people get confused is why are attorneys involved in this and what is their role? And what can't they do? What can they do?
The role varies a little bit based on the type of adoption. For example, in a private placement adoption, the attorney has to help the family become certified as qualified adoptive parents before they can take the child into their home. So the attorney would help them get together all of those items that we just talked about, submit them to the court. The court reviews it. Sometimes courts will ask the family to appear before them to meet the judge, and then the court issues an order which is good up to 18 months, and the family can then take the child into their home.
Now, what happens if you don't have the means to hire an attorney? I would imagine that this is fairly expensive. Can you do this on your own?
The first part, you can do it on your own. Courts don't encourage you to do it on your own because it is somewhat complex, but it could be done. But there are cases where lawyers do take adoptions on pro bono in the appropriate case.
Do they also have court assigned?
Sometimes for birth parents. Not often for adoptive parents, but where the child is coming through a social service agency, there is the stipend that does cover adoption legal fees.
And what I've often been asked when people are looking to adopt is, can you help me find a child? And you've talked a little bit about agency adoptions. Explain for the listeners a little bit about the difference of privately placing a child versus using an agency.
In a private placement, usually the family comes across the child through someone they know or someone who knows someone who knows someone. It's usually some sort of networking that comes along. In New York, a lawyer is not allowed to participate in that matching. There's a specific prohibition against anyone being paid for that matching service who's not a licensed agency. In an agency adoption, the agency does networking to locate a child and helps match the right child with the right family. And part of what's in a home study in an agency adoption is what are the criteria for that this family would need for a successful placement. For example, are they looking for a child who might have handicapping conditions? Is there a racial preference? Is there an age preference for the child? Do they want multiple children? Would they take a sibling group? Those sorts of things.
Now, I would imagine that most of the legal concerns are really going to be, I guess, on the side of the birth mother.
Well, there certainly are, because the birth mother wants to know, first of all, that the family that she's selected are legally qualified to adopt. But then, what assistance can she have? Because, of course, we don't allow children to be bought and sold.
Well, let's talk about that because that's an interesting question. I know we talked about this a little bit before the show. Some states, this varies. I mean, I believe New York is one of the more stringent states of what can be provided. What exactly can be provided? I mean, can you put up the birth mother, in a spa for 6 months before and send her on vacations? Can you do that?
Perhaps if she's from California and the adoptive parents are as well, but in New York that would not be allowed. In New York, we're allowed to pay pregnancy-related expenses for 2 months prior to birth and 1 month post-birth. So that might include things like her living expenses, her telephone, food. You're allowed to help her with medical expenses. Fortunately, in New York, most birth parents would have either private insurance or would be eligible for Medicaid or Health Plus, one of those programs. But you could cover, as an adoptive parent, the co-pays or uncovered expenses.
So you can't actually pay someone for the child?
No, no.
Is that a little bit different with surrogacy?
Surrogacy in New York is still treated as an adoption. New York has a specific prohibition against surrogacy for pay.
So I guess I'm understanding. Can you set it up in a way that they don't really know about you paying all these things? Can you, like, there's got to be a way.
That's called illegal,
it.
Chris.
That's, yes. Both the adoptive parents and the birth parents have to submit a financial disclosure affidavit that indicates what payments have been made, for what they were made, when they were made, and so forth.
And I would imagine that that's signed under penalty of perjury.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Are there bidding wars between people that want to have the same child? Like, say, oh, I'll pay for these. I'll pay for all your medical. This person can't afford to pay for all their medical expenses.
Not usually, especially if there's a licensed agency involved. They would not allow that to happen because children are not commodities.
Now, and the birth parents' right to have counseling, perhaps therapeutic counseling over the issue of adoption, and their right to have an attorney. We were talking earlier about who pays for that.
That would generally be paid by the adopting family. And counseling is very important to help the birth parents get through what can be a very traumatic experience for them. And you wouldn't want them to make that kind of decision without good legal counsel. So that can be covered as well.
And all of these fees, all of these transactions for medical costs or legal costs or counseling, those all have to be disclosed to the court, correct?
They do, in an affidavit.
Did the court ever, do they check them? Do they ask the doctors? Do they call around?
I don't think they do because the lawyer has to sign that affidavit as well. So our licenses are on the line as well.
Now, one of the interesting areas in this is the age of consent. And in today's age, I mean, we're just hearing of young women getting pregnant earlier and earlier. What is the age where a child can give up a child?
I've had represented birth mothers as young as 12.
Wow.
That's pretty shocking. When I do that, if the parent is supportive of their child's decision to place, I like to have them sign the consent as well, although that's not legally required. But a child that young, wherever possible, we would hope to have either a law guardian involved as well, or if there are other limitations, have a guardian ad litem.
I could see major problems with that, especially where you have a 12-year-old who is giving up a child and in the years later saying, hey, I was a child when I gave up this child. I didn't understand what I was doing. I mean, in law school, one of the things we learned was that the age of consent for signing a contract was 18. And if you signed a contract with someone under than 18, well, basically shame on you and that person could get out of the contract. Is that the same with adoption law?
No, it's not, because the best interest of the child being adopted is controlling.
So the best interest of the child being adopted controls over the best interest of the child giving up the child. That's kind of interesting.
It is, but even 12-year-olds have the freedom to choose what to do with their bodies and product thereof.
What's the youngest adoption that you've heard of in New York?
I think 12 was the youngest that I've heard of. I assume you meant the mother by the...
Well, definitely a very, very interesting topic. Now, the attorney that is representing the mother, is there anything else that she would be advising her on? I mean, does she advise her on you have 30 days or 45 days to basically change your mind?
The attorney should do that and should be discussing with her that once she signs the paperwork, she loses her right to automatic return of the child. if the adoptive parents should contest her revocation, then there would be a hearing on what was in the best interest of the child. And that's a difficult hearing for everyone to go through.
So she can't just show back up and take the kid back after she signs the papers?
Not if they contest it.
And we'd love to know what you think about this subject. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Time for the news and weather. When we're back, Barbara and Ann will tell us about some of the most common problems adoptive parents run into.
Fox News Radio, I'm Don Matheson. John McCain calling for oversight of the Bush administration's $700 billion bailout. And he says his rival doesn't have a plan to deal with the crisis.
Senator Obama has declined to put forth a plan of his own. At a time of crisis when leadership is needed, Senator Obama has simply not provided it.
For his part, Barack Obama says the crisis shows it's time for a change.
If your car's in a ditch, you don't want the driver who thinks that we should take the same path that's got us in the ditch.
Ehud Olmert quits as Israeli prime minister.
Now that he has officially resigned, he goes into the role of interim prime minister. He will maintain that position while his successor, Tzipi Livni, attempts to assemble a governing coalition which holds a majority of seats in the Knesset.
Fox News Radio's Mike Tobin. Livni says that she'll pursue a peace accord with the Palestinians. Fox News, we report, you decide.
10 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
All is quiet through the overnight hours and on into this first week of fall. We've got partly cloudy skies, 52 degrees the overnight low, partly cloudy 4-hour Monday, 67. Again, partly cloudy Monday night, 48 degrees the low. And for Tuesday and Wednesday, sunshine both days, highs in the low to mid 70s. From the Weather Channel, I'm Jeff Eno with the 810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517. Or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm joined by the attorneys from my law firm, Tully Rinke, PLLC, to give insight into the legal issues that matter most to you. Tonight's topic, we're dissecting adoption. We're broadcasting around the planet on WGY.com. Joining me tonight are family and matrimonial law attorney Barbara King and adoption attorney Ann Copps. I want to move into the topic now of open adoptions. And I know this always confuses me. Exactly what is an open adoption, Ann?
For about the last 20 years, we've had adoptions where the biological family maintains some sort of contact with the adopting family. That contact can be anywhere from meeting the family initially to actually having ongoing visits as after the adoption is finalized.
So we're not just talking about ongoing contact with the family. We're actually talking about ongoing contact with the child.
That's correct. That's correct.
And is this, in your opinion, you think this is in the best interest of the child to have these type of ongoing contacts?
It depends on the individuals involved. Some families are very good at working together, and some families not so good. So the openness arrangement is different family by family, depending on the needs of the child.
If it starts out an open adoption, is there a way to change that down the line?
It's always determined by the best interest of the child. So if someone were inappropriate in an open relationship, it could be terminated based on that inappropriateness if it were in the child's best interest.
So they can't just decide that they don't want to do an open adoption anymore? They can't take that away, that right?
If it's an agency adoption and a judge has approved the openness agreement, it is a legally enforceable agreement. If it is a private adoption, it's not so clear whether it is enforceable or not. The case law on it goes in both directions.
Who normally asks for this provision to be in the contract, this open provision? Is it normally the birth mother, or is it who normally asks for this?
It's normally the birth mother, but agencies usually address that with the birth mother and the adoptive family before they even meet to assess whether that's something that should be negotiated. Some birth parents don't want any contact, although I have to say that's fairly rare these days. But and I think many adoptive families start out being kind of nervous about that.
Well, I know if I was trying to adopt a child and the birth mother was telling me that she wanted to have contact with the child after she allowed me to adopt the child, I would be kind of nervous that there would be a bond forming then at some point between the child and the adoptive mother, or the child and the birth mother, and the birth mother might change her mind. I mean, I think that this could be setting yourself up for some serious issues later on down the road.
That's why we always involve counselors in the process. But it's really important for the child's sake to make sure that very clear boundaries are set up and clear roles, that the birth parents are the birth parents and the adopting parents are the parents who are going to be literally parenting that child through their lifetime.
So you have open adoptions. What's the other side of the coin where there is no contact? What are they called?
Closed adoptions.
Closed adoptions. That makes sense.
Now, Anne, would you agree that the in the open adoption, the age of the child also comes into play? If the child perhaps is 5 when they're adopted, it would be very different than an infant.
Exactly. And sometimes as the child grows older, the need for openness either expands or contracts, and the agreements that are negotiated need to take the child's future needs into account.
And at some point, the actual opinion of the child could come into play as well, depending on the age.
Absolutely.
So you could have an open adoption where you have the birth mother and you also have the adoptive family saying, we want to have continued contact. And let's say the child is 13 years old and says, I don't want to see my birth mother anymore. What controls there? Is the child's judgment control, or does the openness in the contract control?
Hopefully the parties would work together so that it doesn't become a litigated matter, because that would be the worst possible thing for the child and for everyone else.
And work together, you mean mediation?
Mediation, or? Exactly. Most agencies have mediation available before and require in their agreements that mediation be attempted before anyone go to court.
And I think one of the difficulties whenever we talk about family law, and especially in this area, is by the time you get to court, you file the petition, and you get there for the first appearance, and then it gets set down for trial, you could be talking months, years even.
You could, and that's never good for anybody. These need to be worked on quickly, again, for the best interest of the child.
Where's this child during all these procedures? Is he staying with one of the families, or does he go to a foster home, or is he kind of just in the middle, sitting there waiting to find out who's going to be able to take him?
If it's a dispute over a consent, the court has a number of options. Generally speaking, the child would stay with the adopting parents, but the court does have the option of doing exactly what you said, placing with another agency, putting the child in foster care, placing the child in a neutral setting. But typically, the child stays with the adopting parents.
And I think that just, you know, disrupts the child. I mean, the child has no stability at that point. I mean, the child was adopted. Now the child is living with the adoptive family, and now the child is in a foster home. I think that really creates problems with stability in the child.
Yeah, those would be very unlikely scenarios.
Now, what's the difference between a agency and a private adoption?
An agency adoption is one where the child is placed in the custody of the agency, and then the agency places with an adoptive family. The agency retains legal custody of the child until the finalization of the adoption. The child, though, would live with the adoptive parents to the finalization and then forever afterwards.
Now, when you say the agency has custody, did the birth mother give up her rights to the agency?
Exactly. That's
so
exactly right.
What happens then is when you adopt from an agency, the birth mother is not involved anymore? It's just the agency?
Legally correct, although the birth mother may have retained rights to openness as well. With a private adoption, the birth mother consents to the adoption by the family, and the child goes directly to the adoptive family, and the adoptive family maintains the custody.
So if you're worried about the birth mother revoking, you might want to do an agency adoption.
That's a possibility. Plus, an agency has a lot of experience and ability to assist the birth mother and spot potential red flags.
Are these agencies privately funded, or are they funded by the state?
There are two kinds of agencies. One is a private agency, which is privately funded by the fees paid by the adoptive parents and perhaps by grants. The other is they're known in the law as voluntary agencies. Then there are other agencies, which are every county has a social service agency, and children are placed sometimes with social service agencies by birth parents, or the children are there because they're in foster care.
And when we talk about open adoptions, obviously a step-parent adoption is open because it's usually a couple that's maybe remarried and a child is being adopted into this new family. But we also traditionally think of closed adoptions, or what we usually call sealed records. Talk a little bit about what this New York Adoption Registry is, about sealed records in the more common form.
In New York, all adoption files are sealed as soon as the adoption is finalized. And the only way to get into those records later on is that the adopted child has to present an affidavit by a New York licensed doctor saying that the child has a specific medical condition and that a certain piece of information that might be in the medical records in the adoption file would help the doctor treat that condition.
Perhaps the child has some kind of a kidney disease and there may be some genetic component to it.
Exactly.
But you're not going to get the name of your birth parents.
Exactly. You will not get anything other than whatever limited medical information might be in that file.
Will they at least give you the location? I mean, maybe not the street address, but the city or the state? No,
you won't get that. But there is an adoption registry maintained by the New York State Department of Health. And if an adopted child and the birth parent both register, the adoption registry will make that connection. They will also do it for siblings.
And the role of private investigators, we were having this discussion about how many people, perhaps from adoptions 20 years ago, want to know who their birth parent was, or birth parent wants to find an adoptive child. We were discussing the role of private investigators and the role of the Internet today in that. Talk about that a little bit.
Many people choose to hire a private investigator or search online because they have not been successful with the adoption information registry. And investigators can take whatever information the child may have and try to track down the birth parents using that. Things like the original birth certificate of the child are also sealed, so the child has no access to that in New York.
That new certificate, when I get it after an adoption, shows the name of the adoptive father as the natural father and the mother as the natural mother. This child has no idea.
Correct. Right. Correct.
Now, I know when I was a fireman in New York, they had just changed the law to make firehouses safe places where you could drop children off and you wouldn't be prosecuted. Are there any other places that you can do that other than hospitals and firehouses?
Police stations are also safe havens.
So basically, you can just, if you have a child, you can just drop the child off there and walk away.
If the child is very young. If the child is...
So you can't drop a five-year-old.
Exactly. If that were the case, you might want to approach an agency to get some help there.
Time for a short break. We'll be back with Barbara and Ann when they'll let you know about some of the frauds and scams adopted parents should avoid. Feel free to give us a call with your questions. To reach us, call 1-800-TALK-WGY or press *WGY on your cell phone. If you don't have a chance to get in touch with us tonight, you can reach us at Tully Rinke office all week at 518-218-7100.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, careersintransitionllc.com.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, portfolio manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions, online at integralone.net. That's integralone.net, 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but First Rate Funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable rate mortgage, First Rate Funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First Rate Funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
We're back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and tonight I'm joined by family and matrimonial attorney Barbara King of Tully Rinke and adoption attorney Ann Copps. As always, Val and Chris are here with us. Find out more about the show at WGY. Now, we have a caller on the line, and before I take this caller, I just want to mention that we are going to be talking about the fleeing fornicator, and I know Chris has a lot he wants to say about that.
Lots of questions.
So, Jose.
Jose, yes. Love the show, Greg. Thanks for taking my call, especially College Chris. I think he brings a great flair and viewpoint to the show. But on to my question. I was born in the Dominican Republic. I'm about 30 years old now, former baseball player, but... I was adopted in the U.S. I want to know what my rights are, or any kind of process for finding my parents in the Dominican Republic. It's something that's really affected my life growing up here, not knowing my real family back home. Is there any process you can recommend or just way for me to find my parents back home?
Well, I think that's an interesting question because that raises international law, and we didn't actually talk about the Hague Convention or anything, but I'm going to throw that over to Anne, because I really don't have an idea.
Jose, were you adopted in the U.S. or were you adopted in your home country?
I was adopted here.
Okay. And was it in New York or another state?
Down in New York City.
Okay. So your adoption records are going to be sealed, and so you would need to look at the Adoption Information Registry, which may or may not help you because you're... birth parents may know nothing about that, but you may try online. There are a number of places where you can leave your information, and if your birth parents in your home country are familiar with the internet, they might be able to find you. The other possibility is if you know the agency that did your adoption, because there was likely an agency in the U.S. and an agency in your home country. The rules may be different in your home country, and they may be able to give you more information.
Well, there you have it, Jose. I wish you the best of luck in finding your birth parents.
Good luck, Jose.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Okay, well, I want to talk about father rights, because I know this is an issue that especially gets Chris's blood boiling here. But let's talk about a little bit about what are father rights in regard to adoptions.
Some birth fathers participate in the adoption process in the same fashion that a birth mother does. They meet the family, they help select the family, they sign a consent or surrender, they have an openness agreement, and they proceed just as the mother does. Sometimes we don't know who the father is, or there may be multiple possibilities, and that's where it gets a little sticky.
Well, I guess I have a question about that, and I know Chris is going to have probably the same question, is we don't know who the father is. That concerns me, because I would think that the woman should have a good idea of who the father is.
Well, she does have the right not to reveal the father. She has a constitutional right of privacy. But sometimes there are other reasons why she doesn't know the father.
Let's stop right there. I want to break this apart. A woman has a constitutional right to not name the father? Is that what you said?
Yes, in New York she does.
So she can not name the father. If the father doesn't know she's pregnant, she can now have that child adopted without the father knowing. Is that correct?
Yes, there's a little more to it than that. If the child is an infant when the child is placed, so under 6 months of age, the father is required under New York law to act like a father. He needs to come forward to say, "That's my baby," to support the mother, to file petitions in court for visitation, custody.
But now this is if he knows. I mean, I'm talking about the case where the woman gets pregnant and the guy doesn't know.
But he's deemed to know under New York law if he engages in activities that could reasonably be expected to produce a child.
But, Anne, a one-night stand, and then you show up and you leave, you might not talk to the woman again. What if she's pregnant? Then, you know, you could have a child out there.
So you need to track her down.
You want to find that child. You're telling me you only have 6 months to find out if you have a kid.
You have the whole 9 months. It's the last six of those 9 months that are critical. But it puts the onus on the father to determine whether he became a father rather than the mother having to track him down. Not every state is the same as New York.
Well, it's tough to find out if the woman disappears. Like, that doesn't seem fair to me. And then you're going to hit child support on her if you decide not to get rid of the child.
Sometimes the dads disappear.
That's where our fleeing fornicator term comes
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Yeah, what exactly is the fleeing fornicator rule?
There is a case in New York called Robert O. versus Russell K., and it's established that rule that it is the father's responsibility to learn whether he became a father as a result of his sexual activities.
And his responsibility to learn, he's supposed to ask, I mean, after he has sexual relations with a woman, he's supposed to ask and say, "Are you pregnant?"
Correct. That's his responsibility if he wants any part of the child.
What if she lies to him? What if she just says, "No, I'm not pregnant. I don't have a baby."
That's a different situation. Then his rights may be preserved.
That means he's covered or he's not covered, or it's going to be a big battle in court?
There may be a big battle in court. There have been a few of those.
Now, there are also some other cases that I think arise where there have been problems with some adoptions. And I know probably a lot of our listeners have seen these Dateline series where some of these children that have been adopted from Russia and Eastern Europe, where these children suffered from attachment disorders in horrible conditions. I mean, these children were left in cribs and not stimulated by any humans for months and in some cases even years. And American families adopted these children, brought them to the United States, And now, as the child is getting older, is really acting out and just can't bond with the family, can't bond with anybody. I mean, what do you do in a situation like that where you really want to do the right thing and you really want to do help a child, but the child is – you just can't control the child. You can't – the child is beyond your means. I mean, what are you to do? I mean, can you return – I mean, not that I want to say can you return a child, but what can you do?
These are really tragic situations, and they're becoming more common. There are a number of programs in the state. We're very fortunate to have Parsons here locally that has a post-adoption resource center. And you can go through that program, and they can refer you to services that may help. Unfortunately, there does not seem to be a lot that can be done with reactive attachment disorder, which is what you're talking mm-hmm. about. There have been families in which this has been so difficult that they have surrendered the children to their county social service agency.
But now when they surrender a child, now they're on the hook for child support, right?
That's correct, and until the child is readopted or reaches the age of majority.
And many of these kids might not ever be adopted, I would think. And so you're going to be on the hook in New York. Child support is till 21, right?
It is, yes.
I want to go back to the father's rights again. And we talked about this before the show, and you made a comment about how you had to publicly display that you're looking for the father to terminate his unknown father rights that he doesn't know he has.
That's right. If the mother declines to identify the father or cannot identify the father, and some of the situations where that might happen are where there's a stranger rape, or where she has some limitations or has no memory for that particular evening. Under those circumstances, the courts will publish a notice in the paper to that father giving him a time and date to come to court, and that if he fails to do so, his rights will be terminated.
Is this like a description, if you say like 6 foot tall, dark hair, is it that type of thing?
No, or? It just has to the unknown father, and then it just gives a date and time. It doesn't give a lot of information.
That could be so many people. How are there results from that ever?
In 27 years, I've had 2 people call on those ads.
And actually, I think that's pretty good. You know, because I don't read these ads. I don't think anyone reads these ads. So I would say 2 is – I would say it was going to be 0. So, you know, that's something that definitely I think is something that people need to look into is, you know, the fairness issue of how do you really let the father know that potentially he has a child that's out there. I guess you really need to be careful, and I guess you need to maintain a relationship with the people that you sleep with.
If you want some interest in the child, absolutely you must.
Anne, you and I have had an experience on a topic I want to get to before we run out of time, and that is when a birth parent changes their mind about an adoption. We talked about 45 days to revoke if it's private and 30 days if it's agency. So mom says, I've changed my mind. You represent the adoptive parents. What do you do next?
The first thing that you have to do is try to determine whether the child would be safe returning to the mother's home. If the child is not safe returning to the mother's home, then the adoptive family generally will contest the adoption. If the child would be safe returning to the mother's home, then the family has to decide whether they want to engage in a long court battle and also raise their child knowing that at some point that child will learn won them in a court battle.
Or that they may have to, during that court battle, which could take, as I said, the case I had years ago took about 9 months, they had to give that child back at the end of that court battle.
Exactly. And those things need to be explored very thoroughly before the family makes a decision whether to contest the adoption.
And
the revocation, excuse me.
And the analysis that the court's going to do, if I put my child up for adoption and 2 weeks later change my mind, I don't have any superior rights because I'm the birth mother. The analysis is a best interest analysis,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Once the birth mother signs the consent or surrender, she's forever giving up her right to an automatic return of the child.
Well, definitely an interesting topic, and unfortunately that's it for us this Sunday. I'd like to give a special thanks to both Barbara King and Ann Copps for joining me tonight. If you didn't have a chance to reach us this evening, we can be found all week at the Tully Rinke offices at 518-218-7100. Thanks for listening. We'll be here on WGY each Sunday at 9 p.m. Be sure to join us next week.